Today, I'm honored to be joined by Eric Luzak, founder of Embodied Pathways, a guide, healer, and coach whose work spans the sacred terrain of transformation, mediumship, energy clearing, and death doula services. Eric walks with men and with all those who are ready to meet themselves more fully through the deeply human and spiritual processes of release, healing, and remembrance. His work touches every phase of life and death, helping people shed layers of shame, self-doubt, and disconnect to arrive at a place of deep embodiment and truth. In our conversation, Eric shares his personal story of transformation, how coming home to himself and learning to hold what once felt too heavy or hidden became the very pathway through which he now serves others. This is a powerful and heartfelt episode for anyone who's felt the pull to meet their own inner depths, to touch the places inside that are begging to be seen, honored, and brought back to the light. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you in the episode. Are you obsessed with the mystic? Are you looking for sisterhood? Are you ready to explore your inner magic? You've arrived, sister. Welcome home. I'm Maureen Spielman, and I started this show to highlight the intuitives, healers, and other courageous women I have met along my journey. Through amazing interviews, we go deep into the mystics and uncover the ways in which you can apply the knowledge and wisdom in your own life. We are all in this together. Sharing healing and joy in community is both my passion and my purpose. Here's today's conversation. Welcome back to Mystical Sisterhood. This is your host, Maureen Spielman, and today I'm with Eric Luzak. And I was introduced to Eric by Valerie Wood, who, if you've been a listener around here for a while, you know Valerie's work as an angel channel and a medium intuitive. And I always say that I think that the finest guests come through referrals for me because there's just a touch point of trust. And I think sometimes people might say like, oh, this person could be good. And they sit on it for a while and then they make sure and then it comes through at just the right time. So I want to introduce you, Eric, and say welcome to Mystical Sisterhood.
Thank you. Thank you. And the funny thing is I have a session with Val tonight at 5 o'clock Mountain Time.
It's so perfect. You are founder of Embodied Pathways. You are a men's coach. Your skill set is varied and wide as a channeler, as a man offering death doula services and energy clearing. I think when we first met the other day, a big part of the conversation was your work with men. So we can start wherever you feel like it's important to start. But I already really love the conversation we're about to have because it is so important to, I think, the transformation that we're seeing, these new big invitations for men's work, for what is really unraveling and opening up. And so how do you feel about that? And what do you have to say about this point in time we're finding ourselves in?
Well, I'm 60, so I mean, I'm on the older end of the spectrum, but diving into this work, and I run a men's group myself, is the majority of men have some father wound. Mm. And it's typically a generational father wound. So it's father, grandfather, great-grandfather. And the second you take a conscious effort to do anything, join a group, start to do, you know, hire a therapist, start to work on some of those traumas, you're stopping it.
Yeah.
You're beginning the stop. And if you're going to bring children into the world, like if you don't do anything, I don't care what you believe, some of that trauma is going to be passed down again.
Okay.
And that's important.
And this language that we're launching in with ancestral generational trauma, it would be new to 99% of the planet, right? Mm-hmm. But that's okay because people are fast learners. It's such a beautiful invitation, Eric, that you're making from the get-go of let's just dive in. I have a feeling that's the way you do things too, right? That there's nothing that's off the table. I think when we met the other day, you talked about like the hidden parts of ourselves, like these places that we tuck away. And to the degree that we really have no relationship with them, except for just keep pushing them down. But can you talk about like those darker pockets of places and like the the emotions we carry that men might not even be in awareness of.
Yeah. I mean, some of the big buzzwords in men's work is shadow work, shame, right? So many men have shame that there is just a plethora of these little pockets of trauma. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's a word everybody understands, that we just kind of stuff away. If you're going to be gathering things, you put it in a box and put tape on it and you put it away. You have these basements full of boxes of, you know, stuff from the past. And this goes for everybody, but mostly men, they just put stuff away, right? And it's over there. And what I've been able to uncover through my coaching is, you know, during things are relatively normal, but the minute you're poked or triggered, those boxes mysteriously open up and the shame may come up. The little 8-year-old boy that felt he had to be quiet so his dad could be okay and do his thing, those jump in and they're co-leading. You know, you almost have like a fancy car where you slide over to the passenger seat and this 8-year-old boy starts driving and you just believe you're still driving. Because when I dive in with some of these men, they're like, oh, man. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Like they realize like it's that 8-year-old wounded self. That's like what you're presenting to the people around you into life is that wounded part of you without you even having awareness.
Right. And when you say the thing about being reactive or that self that kind of steps forward in reaction and is more triggered and it kind of like a knee-jerk response is that I think so oftentimes in life we misidentify that as who we are. But how can we know that, well, wait a minute, or do you see that sort of like that kind of like aha by the men you see like, well, wait a minute, that persona that I may have identified with, is it me? And then the questions start to come around that.
So I do like a deep dive in meditation and I have them go inward until they meet the part of them where they feel this thing that we've uncovered happened. So they're meeting that version of themselves, that 8-year-old boy, that 9-year-old boy, you know. And so what we gather from that session is, oh, okay, like I had to go to my room when other people were over so I could be quiet, you know. And so you just start to uncover these parts of you. And then I pull it in where, like, do you see where, like, when you are in the world this way, that's the boy that needed to go to the bedroom and get out of the way. And they, you know, without, you don't know what you don't know. Right. So they're like, oh my God, that makes sense. So you just, I had one client talk about like, when I first started working with you, I couldn't see through that. There wasn't even a crack. And the more I work with you, the more the window opened and I was able to see like, oh my God. Sometimes I leave it the little version of you, right? There's the kid Eric or the 8-year-old Eric. So like, oh, wow. Then we work on like having that version of you sit next to you, but from a place of like just along for the ride, not being the one that's directing.
Right. It's so tangible to think of ourselves at these ages and see, especially those of us raised in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, we can picture like what were the clothes you were wearing, who was around you, the elements, and you're pulling them in. But I love that. Pulling in, I was going to say the tangibility of like your 6-year-old self. It's like so easy to see like, oh, that can't possibly be my adult self. Okay, wait a minute. Yeah. So you do a breaking down. Now, let me ask you before we get in too far, was there an own sort of breaking down in your own life that made you go on your own path that led you to this path with working with men?
There was a innate pull in my life very young where I knew there was something more. Like I remember I was Catholic and I was maybe 8, 9 sitting in a pew with my parents at church. And I remember like not praying, but just going, all right, God, if you're here, give me a sign. I didn't hear anything. I didn't feel anything. And like that was, I remember that being a defining moment. Like I need to go on a search for what is the meaning of life almost.
Wow.
And it's, so it started that early. And then you know, through high school, I started to do some reading. And then my brother was spiritual, so he was like a guide. And I got into non-dual stuff. So it was just this really intricate path of like, oh, I'm bouncing over here. Nandu is not so much. I'm going to go over here. I'm going to look at Buddhism, and you know, I'm going to go over here. And then I got divorced, and you know, there was a lot of issues there, and there was this anger that came through that presented like it was yucky. Mm-hmm. And I knew I needed to work on that. And then I started to work for a woman named Isabel Tierney. And through her process, I was able to like start to see like, oh God, she called it in charging or discharging. So some people bring it in and then they just, you know, simmer and explode. Me, it came and I discharged.
Okay.
So anybody in my wake
felt
it. And meeting a lot of men, but a lot of men are dischargers. Mm-hmm. And so this process through her work was like, okay, I could start to feel the, you know, all the energy and stuff. And it took a while, but then he's like, okay, I'm feeling it. Maybe you burst out, you go, okay, I'm gonna pull it back. You know, and then it got to the point where like, now I can see it coming. I can be present to it. I can create space. And if it's still there and I'm terse, I could at least say, hey, I'm in this place. If I'm with somebody, like I'm feeling on edge, you know, like, can I take a few breaths? I mean, being able to just pause and take, like, hey, time out. I need a moment. I need a moment so I'm not overtaken by this emotion. You know, the word emotional intelligence is used a lot in men's work. And a lot of men do not have emotional intelligence because they don't know how to deal with emotions.
I think that that's such a, I'm glad you brought that up, because I hear a lot of women say, how can my man not know even the basics? And I'll say it in the same corollary that women are learning in their 50s and say, we're all learning together, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like most of us, again, did not learn like healthy communication, what our emotions meant, you know, anything around this world. So, but I sometimes think like, well, it's so understandable that there's absolutely no language, because it's not culturally acceptable to cry, to emote, to all, and that's gotten better, right? That's gotten mm-hmm. better, maybe not for the collective as a whole, but we see pockets of this becoming right. better. But I think the other day when we talked, you said, like, here are some of the myriad of messages I got when I was young. And can you share some of those as to what men weren't supposed to do? Or,
well, you know, don't show emotion. Mm-hmm. Be a man, shut up, right? My dad's listening, sorry, but like, I was an idiot for not knowing things, mm-hmm. you know? And there was this fear of like, I had to do it right.
Okay.
Or I was gonna be
yelled at. And so take that example right there in terms of how an experience like that morphs into shame.
Ooh. Well, you carry this burden. Like, I've been on this journey the last 3 or 4 months of just going really deep in meditation and trying to pull some of this stuff mm-hmm. up, like hearing you're an idiot, you're a failure. You know, the big one was don't go out in the world because you're not sure you're going to get it right. Right. That's a heavy burden to like, so like, you don't want to present strength unless, you know, some guys just do it and they're just like a bulldozer, but like to present strength and being aware of who you are. There's so many things running in the background. Like, you know, you've talked about my embodied pathways. I mean, even to this day, there's parts of me that like are afraid to step sure. out a little bit because I'm not sure I'm going to get it right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I'm worthy if, you know I help people. I get referrals, like you said, all the time. That's the best way to get it. And there's still a part of me that doesn't believe that I'm good enough.
Right, right. So it's even with this months, years of the work for yourself, it is literally like layer by layer, like energy block by energy block. And
somatically baked into the system.
It's somatically baked in. And where you started with the father, grandfather, and we're talking about, you've got your maternal and your paternal sides. So we're talking mm-hmm. coming through both sides. And do you find that most don't even understand that concept that there's more than just what we've experienced in this life? It's coming down from past generations too.
I believe, you know, most men that have had a father wound, mm-hmm. they get that.
Okay.
And I don't know, like, even in my men's group, we don't go too deep into that because we work a lot on what's there. But like, if you would work with me or another men's coach, like, you know, especially my teacher, who's John Weiland, like, he talks about that a lot. Mm-hmm. It's passed down. and sometimes thousands of years, right? And you're just carrying it along and handing it off to the next generation unless you do something. Unless, it doesn't have to be a men's group, but like the, stop the madness, stop the anger, stop like accusing and blaming people, living in a fried nervous system, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you got a question on this, but like some of men's work is like learning how to have a calm, regulated nervous system.
Oh yeah, I mean,
and live in a space where you like, you can feel it amp up and then have a breath or whatever your thing is, drop down, do some push-ups. I don't know what your thing is. Dropping back down and like, okay, I'm finding my balance again.
Yeah, so, so important, especially we're living in such a doing culture. I know we're, you know, we're transitioning to the being culture, yet there's so much of the doing. And I often think of too, like the onus that is on men's shoulders. Like I grew up in the United States, so I only know culture here, but there's a lot on men's shoulders to provide. And I'm sure that that's indoctrinated very early in life. And that's big. That's a lot to carry. Yeah. And I don't know that firsthand, but I just, let's open that up.
Yeah. And you talked about shame, but like when I was raising my children, because my dad was an angry guy, and I told myself I didn't want to be an angry guy, guess who was an angry guy? So the shame that I brought in the desert on this retreat with 65 men, and I may start crying, was like carrying that I was this angry guy that made my kids scared. And I had to own that. And I had been carrying it. And nobody described what it was to me, right? I had a coach from the program that like, oh, you got a lot of shame. Like, whoa, what's that? Oh, that's what you're giving the desert. She'll take it from you. Like, oh, you know, in that exercise with the two men holding me and somebody holding me with my eyes, I just wept like a baby for like 10 minutes. Just releasing years and years and years and years of shame. And it just was like, you know, I had more to give, but like that was just the initial, like opening up the doors and it all just came rushing out. And it's just like, oh my God. And so many men carry shame. So many men.
For that experience, when you went out into the desert, do you feel like the quality of being held in a safe space was one of the things that allowed you, like something in your nervous system was able to relax and just let go?
Oh, yeah. So imagine 65 men, not all the same, but all sharing from a level of, I've got this trauma, I've got this shame, I've got this shadow I'm working on. And you can relate to all of it because there's parts and pieces that everybody has in the collective. And all these exercises, staring at each other, left eye to left eye, you know, triads, you know, four people in a group and breath work and, you know, going out in the desert by ourselves and then bringing back what we experienced.
Wow.
I mean, it's like, yeah, like it's an experience that most men won't ever do unless they decide to go into men's work.
And, yeah.
Like, decide to dive in, to like be held. Let's be clear, to be held by another man without judgment, without anything other than love, is an experience that most men need to experience.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Because when you're talking about it, I'm thinking, and we touched upon it, is that in the, you know, often now it's called bro culture, but where everything is, hey bro, and it's sports, or it's talking about everything but, right? And I think that that's where women with their innate femininity and their, we're not like all emotionally adept, but we were, I mean, we all were once when we were born, right? But so trained away, but we hold spaces for emotions more easily. And so to cross that bridge of like, we're going from the surface to everything outer to like the inner worlds with men, with each other, whole new ball game.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of men have an okay relationship with their partner or their wife. There were several men in our group that got divorced, were going through a divorce. And I watched them on the internet, on social media. Two or three of them are back together with their wives because they did the difficult work where they were blaming their partner for how crappy their relationship was once they did the healing and were able to, it's called a feminine reconciliation, that's for another podcast, but like they bring this letter that they speak truthfully to them of owning all the shit, pardon my French, mm-hmm. that they cause in the relationship, there's a healing, mm-hmm. you know, and to see these guys that I knew, like we're just going through the thick of a divorce and they're like, oh man, they're back together and they're loving and yeah. like, this is great. And they've recreated this family and it was just from doing the deep inner work.
That's beautiful.
It was literally, and then owning their part of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And if someone was listening and they were like, how do you, you know, and it's not even point A to point B because that's too linear. We know nothing is linear, but like, do you begin to teach compassion or like these fields of non-judgment or the things we carry about what we're carrying and letting like even the safety of saying it. I mean, for some, yeah. It's never even been spoken.
Well, hence the name of my company, Embodied Pathways. Most men are unembodied. Mm-hmm. Most men live right here. Mm-hmm. A lot of my work is training you to be in the body. The body is I call it the feeling instrument. Mm-hmm. When you can start to use your body to read the room, to read your partner's energy, to redirect, feeling it up, being able to pull it back down and have your heart open, your body grounded, you know, John Weiland, my teacher, talks about, you know, the great masculine is that needs nothing. So being in a space of consciousness, of awareness, of stillness, that needs nothing.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Imagine your partner then experiencing you as that versus like, you know, I always talk about you got your hand on the arrow that's in your quiver and like she's talking, you're like, all right, I'm setting, I'm pulling, I'm stretching, like, are you done yet? Because I'm ready to shoot this damn thing.
Yeah,
boom, that was yeah. me.
You know what I love about like even just meeting you for the second time, you've got so many good analogies and metaphors, like I never know the definition what the difference is between the two, but you do, and it really kind of makes it so understandable. You know, I know like the two ways that you work too are one-on-one coaching and then, and there, I know there's more than two, but your men's groups, but do you see, is it a variety of man you see coming through the door? Like you've got some that like are ready to go and then they're starting to master the concepts like pretty quickly. Or and then some that are like, oh, wait a minute, this is a whole new vocabulary. Is it all over? And then you just kind of go with following the lead.
So two buckets. So my men's group, I've had people come and people go because it's just too much. Some, they touch the trauma that they know they have and it's just being in the men's group and sharing it's too much and they leave. That's great because you're not ready. And then I got them and they were drawn to it for various reasons and they stay. You know, like I was telling you, I have a core group of about 8 guys that show up and we just continue to do the check-in. You know, we continue to do the embodiment work where we get in our bodies. There's some breath work, some meditation, and then there's a topic. And mm-hmm. these topics are things that men really need to talk yeah. about. And these men bring, I give it to them a week ahead of time to like have some thought on it. And some men don't feel like sharing, but most men, you know, well, one guy will say something, the other guy will like, hey, I've experienced that. And there's just this sharing. Yeah. And like I said, I mean, 2.5 hours later, like, all right, in the concept of time, we should probably end this. You know, you right. got any questions, let us know. And, you know, the ones that feel the value from it and they're continuing to grow. And I got some young guys, yeah. you know, some late 20 guys, and I got some 40 and 50 year olds. And
nice.
It's just beautiful to see this nice blended mix of men that are continuing to show up and know that it's benefiting them in their life via work, via partner, children, family, whatever. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, there's always more, right? There's always more.
Absolutely.
There's always more like we can open up to.
For sure. You know? For sure. Do you find that you know, you live out in Colorado. Do you find your neck of the woods like is open or are you living in a community that practices these things more than maybe the typical community in the U.S.?
You know, it's a mixed bag. I've broadcasted. Susan, my partner, has this okay. yoga studio that's really popular, and she broadcasts my meetings. And I've got a small group, 8 people show up. There's a few other men's groups I've seen pop up. I don't know what gets, you know, then you read like a national one where some guy started something and it grew into something incredible. So like, I don't know like what the right thing is that like grabs people to a point where like that makes sense to me. I'm going, right? You know? And this year, I'm going to wait till it cools off a little, maybe in September, we're going to take one of our meetings or an extra session. We're all going to go into the woods together.
Nice.
And we're going to go sit in the cold river, and we're going to go meditate in the woods, and we're going to hug a tree, and we're going to just like no electronics, no nothing, no structure, mm-hmm. and like have them get a little flavor of what, like just a hint of what a retreat would feel
like,
you know?
Yeah. And it's like real time allowance of the nervous system relaxing. Yeah. That's such a beautiful thing.
I wish there was more men buying in. I wish there was a way that like I could have a magic wand that like I could tap people,
yes. You
know, but it's the people like you that have a show like this that allow me to get on. And like, you might get three or four guys go, that's interesting. You know, and I may eventually have an online one, but like, to me, I want to focus on the in-person one. And if I get enough interest from people outside of Colorado, I would certainly open up to that, but hopefully it just reaches out to them, then maybe have a conversation with me.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe they'll be interested in some coaching. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, people have turned relationships around. I mean, you can't make your life better if you don't do the work.
Yes, I agree. That's true too. Yeah. It's a commitment to self. And we do, when we commit to ourselves, it's everyone says it, like your teachers, and when you're first learning that the world around you changes, and then it becomes something quite magical when you see that happening in real time. When you were kind of, obviously, I can see myself through my own journey of coaching, being in these different programs, is it takes a while. Like that awareness is such a big phase, right? And like a never ending one. Then you get to these phases where you begin to dabble and you're like, okay, I'm going to try that. And it might seem like there's like 100 choices and it's too much, but you begin to experiment with one or another. And then your life starts to transform. And before you know it, you're at least, you know, parts of you are stepping on that embodied pathway. But as you find yourself, I mean, maybe we're in all of them at once, right? In a sense, like, I mean, I know there's full enlightenment and everything like that, but for yourself, like on a daily practice, we're human too, right? So we're going to have the days where we're a little grumpier or a little low energy or all the things, but what do you find really beneficial that like are like not your non-negotiables, but like your kind of things that you really pull into yourself and you tend to practice more regularly?
Well, I have a routine. Mm-hmm. So I wake up and I meditate. Mm-hmm. Typically, it's anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes because it takes me that long to quiet everything down. Then I have some manifestation stuff I do. I have inquiry I drop in. Then I do about 15, 20 minutes of yoga. I do about 25 to 30 minutes of Qigong. When I have the time, I sit in my sauna for 25 minutes and then I plop in my cold plunge for two and a half minutes, and then I start my day. So like I do all that because when I walk out the door, you know, depending if I'm late or whatever, but for the most part, my nervous system is level set.
Yeah.
Like I'm like, and when I don't have time for any of that, you're harried, you're frenzied, you know, you may be short with your partner, you forget to kiss her on your way out, you know, and I feel like most men, once you get into this work, like me, I've been doing this a while, I coach men on it, but like finding grounded presence. Mm-hmm. There's times I'm talking to Susan, my partner, and I feel like I'm there and she's like, where are you? I'm like, oh shit. You know, I gotta ground more, right? Like she can feel me up here, and that's the feminine. Mm-hmm. Like she can feel connection. And when we're thinking like I'm being stoic and I'm here and like, no, you're not. Like, where are you? I need to feel you here. Right here.
Such a good example. You know, so like,
yeah, and I think that's the work. One of my long-standing customers, he said, the incredibly painful act of being present, something along those lines. And because we work a lot on presence and being there. And he's like, it's just such a daunting task, but it's what's needed, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to me, meditation is really an important part of men's work, at least working with me. You know, like this particular client, you know, I think he's on a roll of over 200 days of meditating. Yeah. What I like about meditation when you can quiet yourself is you can drop in these inquiries. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to your inner wisdom, it's that voice that's not quite yours, and you're just like, oh wow, okay, you know. And like, he would share with me some inquiry and what the insight he got. I'm like, man, that is beautiful.
That is.
And that came from you, not me, not anybody else. That came from you. And I think men don't like meditation. It's stupid. You know, when you talk to anybody, like, or they're like, I don't got time. Oh, really? That's the other thing. Like, time is a concept, really. But like, if you can't find 15 minutes out of your day to maybe do some breath work or to drop into a meditation or do 15 minutes of yoga or something to pull yourself into your body. Like, one of the exercises I like men to do is like, you know, getting grounded and then like feeling just past your body, right? And then feeling to the walls, you know, and now go up outside. Now feel like I've got the mountains to my left here. Feel yourself in your presence to the mountains. So starting to train your awareness and your presence to just go past here. I mean, getting grounded, but also expanding your field. And the embodied part is like, yeah, I can be in my body, and my body can have like tentacles out into the energy field, and I can receive
it. Beautiful. Yeah. And then that's true. It just feels so empowered to be, it's almost like these inborn tools we have to be in our environments and to slow down. And I'll just reflect back to you. I think even the slowing down, and I want to know, like, the Eric before, was Eric always this slow and deliberate, or was he like fast track, high, the energy? So I just reflecting back to you, like anyone listening, it's like the cadence is slowed down, right? Because it slows everything down.
I was way more in my feminine. Mm-hmm. I was just more free flowing. And like Susan, we've been together almost 7 years now. Like, when I first met you, this first 3 years before you really dove in the men's work, like, you were super in your feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get into deeper concepts, but she would have to hold the masculine pole.
Okay.
Because I was in the feminine pole. So then there's a, you know, you have both, but men in a relationship, if they want it to be good, really needs to hold the masculine pole most of the time. And when they need the feminine to be in the feminine, ask for permission. Would you be okay holding the masculine pole while I spill my guts right now, because I'm in a place, right?
Yeah.
You know, and being able to like ask for permission and just come from that place. And I'm in a couple of men's group. I have my own, but this other men's group, it's been a couple of years now. Like, man, the transformation. Mm-hmm. There was always this excitable Eric that we just loved following your everything that was going on. But like this last year, we've really watched your strategic effort. Like now, like, well, I'll just sit there and go, oh man, I feel good when you're talking, you know? And you know, it's not always the case, but like when you can slow yourself down and just come from that kind of deliberate in your body presence, like everything slows down.
Yeah. You know? And I think too, like I've been thinking lately of like, okay, let's say you're going through something, dealing with something. Who do you have in your life whom you can turn to and they'll just listen? They will not have an agenda for you. They will not try to fix or give solutions. Like, who is that for you? And I think for so many people, they're craving that and they don't really have it in their life. We're doing a lot of retraining, right? We're training. And then, but that really dawns on me, because a group like the one you're running, they become very like just sacred listening spaces, just, gosh, feeling seen for all the vulnerabilities. And I just love it because we need those safe spaces to go. And they ask, I remember at my children's middle school, they would ask the kids, they did like a school-wide survey, who in your life is like your safe person you can turn to? And when they did the survey, they found that the kids, so many of them didn't have anyone that they would put on that list. Mm. And therein just shows like, oh, wow, these skills are so important to be cultivating in society, especially right now.
Yeah. So when I rewrote my love story, I called in Susan, and part of my edict to the universe was to have a partner who was a mirror for me. And boy, did I call in a bright, shiny mirror, which I love her for that. She calls me out of my BS all the time. So that's a different kind of like, we can have a conversation and she can call me out. But then I have these other men that I'm close with, not the ones of that I, from my group, but ones that I'm in. And if I've utilized them often, like, hey, can I have a side conversation with you? And like, yeah, dude, brother, what do you need? Right. And then you just have this, I'm going through this thing, and like they'll just sit there and they'll listen to you.
Yeah.
And they'll hold you, you know. And another part of a men's group, that's this aside bar, but like another part of a men's group when you're sharing is if you're talking BS in our men's group, like, dude, I call BS mm-hmm. on you. Like do the yeah. work, right? Like, don't tell me like, you know, like, hey, if this thing keeps happening, you got to go in, mm-hmm. right? Don't just like, I don't know what's going on. Like, you know, and that's the other beautiful thing about men's work and being in a men's group is being reflected back to,
yeah.
like, this is what I've seen, mm-hmm. right? Like, that part was cool. That part was cool. But that part, like, I don't feel
okay.
A lot of times, like when you started, you were up here. When you finished, I felt you in my yeah. heart, you know? So like, just being that, like, reflected back to you, like, oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
It's that self-tuning awareness, mm-hmm. right? Like, the more you work on your awareness, the more you catch, like, oh, shit, I'm rising up. I'm going in my head. I need to drop back
yeah.
down. I call it the self-micro-adjustments and self-adjusting, where, like, you may be in a conversation, your partner might be saying some stuff, and you, like, feel your hand mm-hmm. go back here, like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to do some breath work without her knowing. You know, or if it's a coworker, and you're going to pull yourself back down, and it's a self-regulation, like, okay, now I can come from this place where yeah. I'm just witnessing mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. I'm not being poked. I'm not being jabbed. You know, I'm not ready to like spring. If it's like, oh no, I'm going to just witness what's happening here. Be in my body, be present, and then come from that place. You know, it's about reaction and respond, but like, being from this place where you can just to respond. I mean, even if it's like, I'm feeling really triggered, yeah. mm-hmm. that's a response versus like, boom, mm-hmm.
absolutely.
Right? Screaming and yelling. Yeah. You know?
And the problem is, I think that, you know, I think sometimes it's like, well, what's the problem with me getting triggered? And it's like, well, it might be working for you, but it's not working for the people around you. And that's a big one.
Well, you're projecting your stuff onto mm-hmm. somebody. It's like when somebody's saying stuff about you, you know, one of the hardest things to do is like, it's nothing to do yeah. with you. Mm-hmm. You're just dealing with their crap and they're projecting
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's so
you.
True. I learned that, you know, in the last few years. And when you start mm-hmm. really looking at that, it begins, yeah. I think when you can do the work around, can I hold myself in this compassionate field? And then you're, you know, you've got these people around you that are getting it. They're doing the work with you. It's like, then you can start to look at the mirrors, like you're saying, like, how is that a mirror for me? Because we don't want to look in those mirrors at first. We're like, that's too scary. But then things like mirrors, or how am I projecting? Or like, for me personally, I say that I want to be as judgment-free as I can. And then I'll find myself casting judgment. And it might be in a smaller, innocuous way, but it's like, No, that's still there for you. Like, why is that still existing? Mm-hmm. Why is it operating? You know, we talked about like men as like the, like, oh, I'm going to like lash out, or I'm going to attack, or however that comes outwardly. But sometimes we have like the male as more the docile one who retreats and becomes the people pleaser or the over pleaser. And I think, will you talk about that yeah. a little bit? Because I think like, that's almost like that is so the way we describe what women do, but it pertains to men as well.
Yeah. There's two points you touched on there. There's the ones that project out, belch out their emotions. But my first simplest understanding of the masculine was freedom, right? Like, how many guys ghost a girl on dating apps? How many guys in a marriage get called out and they go to put their gaming set on, or they'll go look at porn, or they'll go disappear on their motorcycle or whatever, go get a beer with the guys because they don't want to have to look at it. And that's that freedom piece. Like, I'm just going to disassociate myself from it. I don't have to deal with it. And then you just come back like, okay, mm-hmm. like I've got that stored away. Like we talked about, it's in yeah. the box, right? And then eventually you know, your partner's going to be like, well, you don't ever look at this crap, and you do the same thing over and over again. And there's a lot more deeper part to the people pleaser, but like a lot of us men, majority of men, have some form of people pleasing okay. in there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and it's typically from an old wound.
Yeah.
You may have, you know, if you're familiar with IFS, you may have the savior. You may have like the rescuer, you know, whatever that is. Like, well, that's what I had to do when I was six, yeah. right? Like, I had to make sure little sis was okay and little brother was okay and they were fed and diapers were on. And, you know, so like, all those parts that we tend to not look at are infused in us being part of the people pleaser.
Wow. Yeah.
And it makes you feel good too. Think about it. I mean, it's not healthy, but like, okay, well, I made her feel good. I made him feel good. I've done this. And like the placebo effect, it's like, okay, I did this and okay, I, you know, and now I could just rest. Yeah. And you're not really looking at the source and all the things that are causing this. If there's certain issues going on in your life, I use the word like anything that shows up is like an invitation, mm-hmm. right? If there's a pattern, if there's a behavior that continues to show up, that's life going.
Right.
Excuse yeah. me. You open the door like, yes, like, I'm here again. Yeah. Like, are you going to invite me in and have tea with me? Or are you just going to close the door and I'm going to start knocking louder and bring more of my mm-hmm. friends?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, Eric, I'm thinking about like when you're talking about, oh, I just want freedom. I just want to be free. And so we project onto the other person that they're the reason we don't feel effing free. Oh, yeah. And the truth of the matter is we can be with someone and feel complete freedom, right? It's not about mm-hmm. the person, but there's that, that's really rich conversation. Like what you were saying, like mm-hmm. in your men's groups, you'll have those themes of like balance. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I forget the other one you told me, but it's like something like
capacity
and like freedom, right? Like, what does that mean to you? Because freedom, I feel like with men is like a really juicy, big one.
Well, freedom is, in a healthy way, to embody freedom is not, you know, it, like John Wieland talked about, that needs nothing, mm-hmm. right? Being free in the stillness, that you don't need anything from your partner to make you feel better, yeah. right? Like, I think people, you know, my happiness is contingent on, mm-hmm. right? If my job's going good, if my family life's good, yes and no, right? Life's. And either you're in it from this place of freedom or like, okay, I'm not going to let that experience or that whatever's happening throw me. I mean, may tip you over, but like you have the capacity to come back and go, all right, well, I just got thrown mm-hmm. a curveball. Mm-hmm. And how do I meet it where it's at? And how do I bring the freedom of spaciousness, of stillness, of being not this reactionary, like, you know, think about men. I got it. Like, I'll take it. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to do this. You know, that's my job, yeah. mm-hmm. right? It's this, you know, busting through a wall kind of a thing versus like, no, let me, you know, being a man doesn't always mean you have to fix everything.
Wow. Like physically and emotionally. like
right. I mean, like the true fixing is putting the mirror up and going, what do I need
right,
to do
right.
here?
Yeah.
Because taking ownership of like, could I have possibly been part of why this mm-hmm. fracture is mm-hmm. happening? And I think a lot of men, especially some of the guys in the group, start to see like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah.
You know, like where some, you know, a guy would be like, I didn't realize how much anger I had. Like, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yep. That feels good to even just the awareness of realizing I had more anger than I thought I had. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, with young kids, it's like, okay, the fact that they were coloring on the couch and you don't like coloring on the couch, instead of screaming at them, you could have just said, all right, let's go to the table, right? Like just simple little redirects or whatever. And like, but no, it's this, like, you're not present, right? You're not in your body. So like, oh, you're on the couch coloring again. And oh, you know, damn it, you know, time out or whatever. Yeah. Like, wait, they're being in this creative space. How do we just redirect this? And you know, and then talking about a mirror, you're mirroring, oh, dad gets mad when I do mm-hmm. this, right? Or mom gets mad when I do this. And so like, how do the kid, what does a kid bring into adolescence and adulthood? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to be like that mm-hmm. because that's how they mm-hmm. did it, right? Mm-hmm. Matt, versus like, you know, oh, dad, it's really common that happened, right? Like, okay,
completely.
You know, like, because that's, I think the thing what people don't realize is like the impact that you give by the way you act, by the your frequency, you know, your emotion, like that it's like a radio station.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. Yes.
Is it clear? Uh-huh. I mean, are you 4K, you know, is there clarity or is it static? And like, I can't hear you, what you're cutting out. Like, and it's just, you know, like,
right. Brr, right. Brr, yes. Know? Yes. And we could
just stopping and going like, what is my frequency in the moment? Right. Like, I'm a big proponent, especially people just starting out, like set a timer on your watch or something, 15 minutes, half an hour, check in. When was my last conscious breath? What energy and what place am I in my body? Yeah. You know, what is my whole, there's a myriad of things, and just start to like create this awareness, like, oh shit. The last time I checked was the last time I had a conscious breath, because I asked myself when was my last conscious breath, right? Versus like, and then you start going like, oh shit, I'm going too fast. And just like a simple breath, two, three breaths. It's just like, oh, there we
Anchor it back in. Right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How beautiful. You know, Eric, when we were talking too, interestingly, you know, as part of your work, you were sharing with me how you started to channel other energies when you were young. And then, I mean, if anyone were to look at your website, you do energy clearings for homes. You came into the realm of, which is an aside, but all connected, the death doula services. But do you want to talk about any of those pieces of your work just as an adjunct, or we don't have to today, but I just wanted to welcome that.
No, I could touch on that a little bit. Yeah, I knew I had a connection and I stuffed it all away a lot. And kind of it unfolded later in life. I remember me and my brother saw a medium and she was amazing. And she had a book and she had this back end of it was all a guide on how to open up your mediumship. And I remember my grandmother and grandfather came through. Well, like 2 weeks into practicing this, and gave me evidentiary evidence. And I called my mom, and there was stuff I would never knew. And she started bawling, like, how did you know that? I was just like, because they told me. and she's Italian. She was grew up in Italy. She's like, did they speak Italian? And I'm like, no, because I don't understand Italian. They spoke in English. But I quieted it down again because it was scary. I mean, that's a scary thing to get information. Right. I saw their faces. Yeah. So then that's where Val came in. I started to see Val for other reasons. And then she told me, like, you know, you have the gift. And I was just like, oh, my God. So now, like, I worked with her for years. And now the other side speaks to me. So I share that, too. And the ghost thing was my kids talked about they saw this woman in our house that was in her 20s that would be in this dress flowing and stuff. Like, I didn't believe. I'm like, okay, cool. And then one day I was putting my clothes away, and I thought my daughter was standing there. I'm like, yeah, Gianna, I look up and there's this ghost just hovering there. I'm like, oh my God. So I just asked my guides, and I'm like, what do I do? And they gave me this process to move ghosts through. And it worked. And Susan, like, oh, your house feels lighter. What happened? I'm like, I told her, I'm like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. So then my brother had a neighbor that had ghosts. He's like, you want to give it a shot? I'm like, all right. So I went in there and I cleared these ghosts out of their house. And I'm like, I'm going to put a shingle out. So like I've done a bunch in Illinois. Val even gave me a few people because that's something she doesn't do. I came here. I've cleared three or four houses here. And like, I just have this innate ability that I know what to do. And like,
Isn't that amazing?
Move spirits through.
Yeah. I love
it's really fascinating.
It is fascinating. Cause it's like, I love how the gifts come online, right? They come when they're supposed to. And they just like, again, with that, like you said, like the radio station frequency kind of thing, they just come online and here they are. Can you do those remotely?
I can. I've cleared houses remotely as well.
Yeah.
I've gotten, and part of the thing too was trusting. You know, Val was like, well, why don't you trust that you have the gift? Like, because I'm scared. Yeah. You know, I'm not Teresa Caputo or Tyler Henry, but like I get information and I pass it along, you know? And I did discover because how I really found out, like Val gave me a picture and I was able to tell her all these things that happened, but my son-in-law gave me a picture book from his grandfather who he missed dearly. And the information that came through was crazy.
Wow.
Like I was seeing the cars he had. I saw the white dog and the name of the dog. I saw that he dropped dead in his kitchen. I mean, like one of the things he didn't even know about. I'm like, did your grandfather come home and dance with his wife every time from work? I don't know. He texts his grandmother and she's like, oh God, every day he'd have me put whatever down and he would grab me, turn the radio on. We would dance for like 5 minutes.
Wow.
So like,
Yeah.
Like, so you just, you know, I feel like, all right, I can hold something and I get this information and it's really, it's a cool gift.
That is beautiful. Yeah. And then how did you get into death doula services?
Well, I was always fascinated with death. Don't ask me why. And at 21, I had a near death experience. I had a very major surgery and the next night I woke up and I was like vibrating on my bed and I like, oh my God, what's going on? Like convulsing. And I closed my eyes. I left, you know, I saw there's Eric on the bed, right? Like, and there's the thing beeping. I'm like, oh my God, I'm dying. And I went to the ceiling and I put my hand to the ceiling. I wasn't religious, but I was talking about people who get find God. I was like, oh my God, please God, I'm too young. I was 21. Like, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. So I just remember floating around a little bit. I came back into my body. I opened my eyes. I was convulsing again. I closed my eyes. I came back out again. It was a little bit more peaceful this time. It's like, okay, I know what's going on, but I still don't want to die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I did this thing and I came back down. And then I think I woke up the next morning, but like, wow. I don't know what was going on. I don't know what happened, but like that really launched me into,
yeah.
Like, I joined mm-hmm. hospice. I volunteered in hospice. I was going to get my education in thanatology, which is okay. death. So there was just this drive to that. And then I just, the hospice program I went in, the woman talked me out of getting into like social work and working with the dying. Cause she said, if you want to make money and have a family, don't do it. And she just scared the hell out of me. And I was like, okay, I'm going to switch gears. So here I am, you know, 59, now I'm 60. I was like, I'm feeling the call. Okay. Like it's time. I have so much more to offer now that I can bring. And what a gift to sit with somebody who's dying.
And
like, what a special gift to be able to hold space for somebody while they're passing.
Yeah, I agree. And when you're in that role, is part of the role assisting the person and the family too, in terms of imparting
everything.
Just information that's comforting. And
I mean, plus with my coaching ability, like conflict resolution, right? Like healing old wounds, you know, like I'm still working on getting clients, you know, because I just graduated not too long ago. But like the woman I got my certificate from, she's like, some people live in another state and their parent is dying here.
Yeah.
So you go sit with them and, you know, you can do a live like meeting. And so like, yeah, she just turned me on to a big conglomerate of death.
Okay.
So I'm joining this group. So, you know, it's just. It's a weird space to be in to like, where do you go? Like, how do you present yourself? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's more cold calling, like going to the VW hall, you know, going to different places. And hey, I offer these services, going to nursing homes.
Absolutely.
And memory care facilities. Yep. And like, you know, do you need the services of a death doula?
Yeah.
So that's my next.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Adventure.
Mm-hmm. There's, and we know for any of the populations that you see, it's like, there are teams and teams of people. It's just the opening up. And I think for me, it's like I told you the other day, I'm like, okay, you're like my second men's coach I know. And then that becomes like a calling card. And I've come from a very open-heartedness place where like, no, we want to share the wealth. There's nothing about the scarcity. We need more change in the world. It's called for. Let's support one another's growth and expansion, because it is expansion for all.
Yeah. And it's so needed on the men's side of things, like to just have a more open hearted, grounded, present man that walks the earth is really what's needed.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a beautiful place to finish today. Is there anything else that's coming you'd like to add or you feel is a message that wants to come through?
Yeah, I mean, if there's women that, like, oh, I want my men to do this or whatever, like, it's a call to men out there, like, fight through the discomfort, fight through anything that says, no way, I don't want to do that, and just go find a men's group.
Mm.
Go find a men's group and sit at one time. Might not be for you, but check it out.
Awesome.
Experience being held by other men. Experience just being in this space with other men that have a big open heart, and then you can share maybe some deep, dark stuff that you've just never felt capable or able to, your life will change.
Absolutely.
And back to our first thing, you're chipping away at that ancestral trauma that's being passed down.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wow. It's big work. It's mighty work, and it's worth it.
And it's
and
worth
you're
it.
Worth it.
100%. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Eric. I will include the website to Embodied Pathways and just your email, like everything. So for the listener, but thank you a million times over for being here. And to the listener, we'll see
thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. We will see you in the next episode. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Mystical Sisterhood. If you love what you heard, please hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. And if it's on Apple or Spotify, I would be so grateful for a 5-star rating and review. And be sure to share with a friend if you're called to do so. To learn more about my one-on-one coaching programs and join the Mystical Sisterhood community, visit MaureenSpielman.com or MysticalSisterhood.com.